problem. Hello, and welcome to my show. This is Kit, and I'm going to finish the reading of Burning Chrome. Hopefully, let's see if I am live. Am I live, guys? Good. It's been confirmed we are live. I had some technical difficulties. I forgot to turn on my microphone. So I was reading to myself the whole time. I'm just gonna have a sip of tea. And then we can get going with the story. We were looking for the world's heaviest fence. A non-aligned money laundry capable of dry cleaning a megabuck online transfer and then forgetting about it. All those calls were wasted finally, because it was the Finn who put me onto what we needed. I'd gone up to New York to buy a black box rig, because we were going broke paying for all those calls. I put the problem to him as hypothetical as possible. Macau, he said.
Macau?
The Lung Hum family, stockbrokers. He even had the number. You want a fence? Ask another fence. The Lung Hum people were so oblique that they made my idea of a subtle approach look like a tactical nougat. Bobby had to make 2 shuttle runs to Hong Kong to get the deal straight, and we were running out of capital and fast. I still don't know why I decided to go along with it in the first place. I was scared of Chrome, and I'd never been all that hot to get rich. I tried telling myself it was a good idea to burn the House of the Blue Lights because it was a creep joint, but I just couldn't buy it. I didn't like the Blue Lights because I'd spent a supremely depressing evening there once, but that was no excuse for going after Chrome. Actually, I halfway assumed that we were going to die in the attempt. Even with that killer program, the odds weren't exactly in our favor. Bobby was lost in writing the set of commands we were going to plug into the dead center of Chrome's computer. That was going to be my job, because Bobby was going to have his hands full trying to keep the Russian program from going straight for the kill. It was too complex for us to rewrite, and so he was going to try and hold it back for 2 seconds, the 2 seconds I needed. I made a deal with the street fighter named Miles. He was going to follow Ricky in the night of the burn, keep her in sight and phone me at a certain time. If I wasn't there, or didn't answer in just a certain way, I told him to grab her and put her on the first tube out. I gave him an envelope to give her money and a note. Bobby really hadn't thought about that much, how things would go for her if we blew it. He just kept telling me that he loved her and they were going to go together, how they'd spend the money. Buy her a pair of icons first, man, that's what she wants. She's serious about that Sim-Stim scene. Hey, he said, looking up for the keyboard. She won't need to work. We're going to make it, Jack. She's my luck. She won't ever have to work again.
Your luck, I said.
I wasn't happy. I couldn't remember when I had been happy. Have you seen your luck around lately? He hadn't, but neither had I. We'd both been too busy. I missed her. Missing her reminded me of the one night in the House of Blue Lights, because I'd gone there out of missing someone else. I'd gotten drunk to begin with, then I'd started hitting vasopressin inhalers. If your main squeeze has just decided to walk out on you, booze and vasopressin are the ultimate masochistic pharmacology. The juice makes you maudlin, and the vasopressin makes you remember. I really remember. Clinically, they use this stuff to counter senile amnesia, but the street finds its own uses for things. So I bought myself an ultra-intense replay of a bad affair. Trouble is, you get the bad with the good. Go gunning for transports of animal ecstasy, and you get what you said to, and what she said to that, how she walked away and never looked back. I don't remember deciding to go to the Blue Lights, or how I got there. Hushed corridors and this really tacky, decorative waterfall trickling somewhere, or maybe just a hologram of one. I had a lot of money that night. Somebody had given Bobby a big roll for opening a 3-second window in someone else's ice.
I don't think the crew at the door liked my looks, but I guess my money was okay. I had more to drink there than when I'd done what I went there for. Then I made some crack to the barman about closet necrophiliacs, and that didn't go down too well. When this very large character insisted on calling me war hero, which I didn't like, I think I showed him some tricks with the arm before the lights went out, and I woke up 2 days later in a basic sleeping module somewhere else. A cheap place, not even room to hang yourself. And I sat there on the narrow foam slab and cried. Some things are worse than being alone. But the things they sell in the House of Blue Lights is so popular that it's almost legal. In the heart of darkness, the still center, the glitch systems shred the dark with whirlwinds of lights, translucent razors spinning away from us. We hang in the center of a silent slow-motion explosion, ice fragments falling away forever, and Bobby's voice comes in across light years of electronic void illusion. Burn the bitch down. I can't hold the thing back. The Russian program rising through towers of data, blotting out playroom colors, and I plug Bobby's homemade command package into the center of Chrome's cold heart. The squirt transmission cuts in, a pulse of condensed information that shoots straight up, past the thickening tower of darkness. The Russian program, while Bobby struggles to control that crucial second, an unformed arm of shadow twitches in the towering dark. Too late. We've done it. The matrix folds itself around me like an origami trick, and the loft smells of sweat and burning circuitry. I thought I heard Chrome scream. I saw a raw metal sound, but I couldn't have. Bobby was laughing, tears in his eyes. The time-elapsed figure in the corner under the monitor read, 07, 24, 05. The burn had taken a little under 8 minutes, and I saw that the Russian program had melted in its slot. We'd given the bulk of Chrome's Zurich account to a dozen world charities. There was too much there to move, and we knew we had to break her, burn her straight down, or she might come after us. We took less than 10% for ourselves and shot it through the Lung Hum set up in Macau. They took 60% of that for themselves and kicked what was left back to us in the most convoluted sector of Hong Kong Exchange. It took an hour before our money started to reach the two accounts we'd opened in Zurich. I watched the zeros pile up behind a meaningless figure on the monitor. I was rich. The phone rang. It was Miles. I almost blew the code phrase. Hey, Jack, man, I don't know what it's all about with this girl of yours, kind of funny thing here. What? Tell me. I've been on her, like you said, tight but out of sight. She goes to the loser, hangs out, then she gets a tube, goes to the House of Blue Lights. She what? Side door, employees only. No way I could get past their security. Is she there now? No, man, I just lost her. It's insane down here. Like, the blue lights just shut down. Looks like for good. 7 kinds of alarms going off. Everybody running. The heat out in riot gear. Now, there's all this stuff going on. Insurance guys, real estate types, vans with municipal plates. Miles, where'd she go? Lost her, Jack. Look, Miles, you keep the money in the envelope, right? You serious? Hey, I'm real sorry. I hung up. Wait till we tell her, Bobby was saying, rubbing a towel across his bare chest. You tell her yourself, cowboy, I'm going for a walk. So I went out into the night, and the neon, and let the crowd pull me along, walking blind, willing myself to be just a segment of that mass organism, just one more drifting chip of consciousness in the geodesics. I just put one foot in front of the other, but for a while I did think, and it all made sense. She'd needed the money. I thought about Chrome too, that we'd killed her, murdered her, as surely as if we'd slit her throat. That night, they carried me through all the malls and plazas would be hunting her now, and she had nowhere to go. How many enemies did she have in this crowd alone? How many would move now that they weren't held back by the fear of her money? We'd taken her for everything she had, she was back on the street again. I doubted she'd live till dawn. Finally, I remember the cafe, the one where I'd met Tiger. Her sunglasses told the whole story, huge black shades with a telltale smudge of flesh-toned paint stick in the corner of one lens. "Hi, Ricky," I said, and I was ready when she took them off. Blue, Taliesin blue, the clear trademark blue they're famous for, size icon, ringing each iris in tiny capitals, the letters suspended there like flecks of gold. "They're beautiful," I said. Paint stick covered the bruising. No scars with work that good. "You made some money." "Yeah, I did," then she shivered. "But I won't make any more. Not where that way. I think that the place is out of business." "Oh." Nothing moved in her face then. The new blue eyes were still and very deep. "It doesn't matter. Bobby's waiting for you. We pulled down a big score." "No, I've got to go. I guess he won't understand, but I've got to go." I nodded, watching the arm swing up to take her hand. It didn't seem to be part of me at all, but she held on to it like it was. "I've got a one-way ticket to Hollywood. Tiger knows some people I can stay with. Maybe I can even go to Chiba City." She was right about Bobby. I went back with her. He didn't understand. But she'd already served her purpose for Bobby, and I wanted to tell her not to hurt for him, because I could see that she did. He wouldn't even come out to the hallway after she had packed her bags. I put the bags down and kissed her and messed up the paint stick, and something came up inside me, the way the killer program had risen above Chrome's data. A sudden stopping of the breath in a place where no words is. But she had a plank to catch. Bobby was slumped in the swivel chair in front of his monitor, looking at his string of zeros. He had his shades on, and I knew he'd been in the Gentleman Loser by nightfall. Checking out the weather, anxious for a sign, someone to tell him what his new life would be like. I couldn't see it being very different, more comfortable, but he'd always be waiting for that next card to fall. I tried not to imagine her in the House of Blue Lights, working 3-hour shifts in an approximation of REM sleep while her body and a bundle of conditioned reflexes took care of business. The customers never got to complain that she was faking it, because those were real orgasms. But she felt them, if she felt them at all, as a faint silver flare somewhere out on the edge of sleep. Yeah, it's so popular it's almost legal. The customers are torn between needing someone and wanting to be alone at the same time, which has probably always been the name of that particular game, even before we had the neuroelectronics to enable them to have it both ways. I picked up the phone and punched the number for her airline. I gave them her real name, her flight number. "She's changing that," I said, "to Chiba City." "That's right, Japan." I thumbed my credit card into the slot and punched my ID code. "First class." Distant hum as they scanned my credit records. "Make that a return ticket." But I guess she cashed the return fare or else didn't need it, because she hasn't come back. And sometimes late at night, I'll pass a window with posters of SimStim stars, all those beautiful identical eyes staring back at me out of faces that are nearly as identical. And sometimes the eyes are hers, but none of the faces are. None of them ever are, and I see her far out on the edge of the sprawl of night and cities, and then she waves goodbye. And that was the conclusion of Burning Chrome by William Gibson. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know if you want more short stories from this collection. Have a nice day and night and evening.